You are listening to A Public Affair here on KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran. I'm delighted to welcome my co-host this morning, Kim Mooney, to the airwaves. As we continue our regular coverage of end-of-life issues, Kim Mooney has a long history of working in this particular arena in the hospice care industry. Now you can find out more about her work at her website, practicallydying.com.
Practically-dying.com.
We'll link to that at kgnu.org. And today we have a very interesting show looking at what happens to our bodies after we die. And Kim, I'll let you introduce our two guests who have a very specific background in this particular area.
I will. We have with us Sue Mackey, who owns Out of the Box Funeral Planning. I think that's such a great name, and does a lot of preparation with people, thinking again about the big picture. And Bev Boyer, who does one of the most unusual things I know, and it's Peak
Research
Institute. It's a cadaver lab, which a lot of people aren't familiar with. So we've talked a lot before we got on here. We got excited talking in the parking lot.
Well, we're going to find out exactly what these two ladies do. And I would like to remind our listeners that they can join the conversation. We'll be opening up the lines a little bit later on. The number is 303-442-4242. Well, Sue, out of the box funeral planning. What is so out of the box about the way you plan a funeral?
I help people navigate all the complexities of funeral planning and their other end-of-life planning, medical directives specifically, and pulling all the pieces together of what will make it easier on the family, either during a serious illness or at the end of life. So as far as the funeral piece of it, it's just really letting people know all the different alternatives that are out there, not just what we're culturally used to.
I suppose if I could put out there maybe the two things that we are culturally used to is either internment, getting buried, or cremation. Mm-hmm. But they are not the only two options.
That's correct. Yeah.
What are some of the other options?
Doing a family-led funeral, which is also known as a home funeral, is a movement in the country right now. We actually formed an alliance about 3 years ago, the National Home Funeral Alliance. So nationwide, this is starting to become more of a movement and more culturally understood. It's what we used to do. It's what we used to do 100 years ago. Funerals happened in the home. People died in the home. They didn't die in the hospital. And they were laid out in the home, in the parlor, in the front parlor. The family took care of the body. And so we're reclaiming that hands-on, actually very healing experience.
How has it come to the point where we have become so disconnected to death? Where, well, part of it medically, so many people don't die in the home, they're dying in a hospital. And then that body, maybe the person never comes home again. But it seems like there's a whole industry that has emerged around dealing with bodies after death. And that has in many ways removed the family from that equation.
That's exactly it. What you said about the people dying in the hospital. So we're already removed from death. We don't have the intimacy with it that we used to have. It's not part of our life cycle. And it's just become easier for the mortuary or the funeral directors to take over that job. People don't want to deal with it. So.
And then people probably don't realize that they have other options.
They don't. When you're in the general public and you mention that you can keep a body at home on dry ice for 3 days, the reactions are mixed, but mostly, oh my God, you're kidding. It kind of freaks people out. And the people who have had the experience of having a body kept at home, even if it's just for 6 or 12 hours, it's profound. It's profound.
So is that helpful for the people who are left behind in the grieving and the bereavement process?
Yes, it is. It really gets the grieving process started in a very healthy direction. And there's something about being able to do something. We feel so helpless around death. And so by passing off the body to a total stranger, generally a total stranger, there's a disconnect. And there's also a disbelief around what's happened. So by being with the body itself and having some hands-on and being able to physically do something for our loved one, often a continuation of what they were doing if a person was on hospice, same type of care, they move through the grieving process in a much healthier way.
We'll talk about the physical changes that happen to a body, certainly with Bev Boyer, who actually runs a cadaver lab. But just as we finish up, Sue, mm-hmm. you said that it's possible to keep a body on dry ice at home. So this would be an alternative to the embalming process, which has become so ubiquitous in, it seems, funeral planning.
Absolutely. People in our country believe that embalming is legally required, and it is not. Very, very rare circumstances where embalming is required, maybe for transport across state borders, and even then it's not. That's not a hard line. So, yes, it avoids the whole invasive process of embalming and keeping the body whole and intact.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the legalities around some of this, because mm-hmm. I know there have been measures by lobbyists on behalf of the traditional funeral home industry to kind of remove some of that control out of families around funeral planning. We'll talk a little mm-hmm. bit more about that with Sue Mackey, who's with Out of the Box Funeral Planning. But our next guest is Bev Boyer. And as we heard, she runs a cadaver lab. And this is not a new concept. People have been donating their bodies for research for many, many years. But you do something that's a little bit unique because you start the relationship prior to death.
Correct. So one of the differences that we are, or we're an independent lab, but we're a nonprofit organization, and we're really based off of education and research. And one of the things that we're able to do, or through our studies, people found out about who we were and what we were trying to accomplish. And one of the goals is to allow practitioners like myself, my background is in massage therapy, to allow practitioners like myself to learn about the human body and study, because it wasn't a part of our formal education. And so we created a lab where people from alternative study, yoga instructors, Pilates, personal trainers, nursing, anyone that wasn't exposed to working with cadaver studies. So we had a lady who found out about us, and she was going to pass, and she was 90 years old, and she wanted to donate her body directly to us. And so her family came to us, and we're like, we don't know if we can do that. So we researched it, and we established a relationship with a nursing home down in Colorado Springs. So we have two facilities, one in Longmont and one in Colorado Springs. And we established a relationship with a funeral home, and they received the body when the lady died. And we were able to meet with her and find out her health history, find out her lifestyle, find out that she walked every day up until 5 months before she passed. We found out that she was a golfer. We found out why she passed. And we found out so much information that we could start to research, and we could learn so much more, and we could honor her for who she was. And then if questions came up during our study, we could actually call the family and speak to the family and find out more. And so it's kind of blossomed from there. And so we've established different relationships with different donors, and it really gives them a new light about life in what's going to happen once they die. And so we have had several donors that have passed, two from the Longmont area, and they wanted us to learn from them. So one had brain cancer. She wanted us to be able to study her brain and find out what radiation, the effects of radiation occurred during some of her therapy. And how did that affect the brain? And could we study that? And would we understand it? And all of her other symptoms, you know, could we learn from that? And then how can we adjust our treatments accordingly? Or how can we understand the human body differently to be able to share that to others?
And so what happens then to the bodies after all the research has been done? Does the family then get to decide, well, the next stage in this process?
Sure. So we usually study the person for about a year, and then they're cremated and sent back to the family. We have had one donor that wishes not to go back to their family, and so we're going to create something around that. Yeah. And so it's interesting, but most bodies go back to the family.
We hear so often people want to donate their bodies to science, but how did they even go about connecting with an organization like yourself or a similar organization?
Sure. So there's several organizations in the state. There's one called Science Care, and we've actually received bodies or donors from Science Care. And so they're really big in the country. They're based out of Phoenix and Aurora. Also, most states have anatomical boards. So Colorado Anatomical Board is another resource. There's another independent lab in Westminster called Laboratories of Anatomical Enlightenment. And then ours, Peak Research Institute here in Colorado. There's other groups called BioGift, other national organizations. And there's even colleges now that are creating bone farms, where people are donating their bodies and they're being put out on a farm for forensic students to study. And so different levels of decomposition, and they're buried at different levels. And so it's interesting how that...
Is this something that somebody has to choose for themselves before they die, or can a family make this decision after somebody is deceased?
For the most part, the person makes the decision before they die as best they can. If the family knew that this was their wishes and they hadn't put that in place, then the family can sign for the person. Yeah, so it could go both ways, actually.
That's Bev Boyer. She's my guest here on A Public Affair on KGNU this morning, talking about one of the options that more and more people are choosing to do with their bodies after they die. And that is the subject of today's show. Our other guest is Sue Mackey with Out of the Box Funeral Planning, talking about taking back the end of life and particularly the after death process and to bring that back into the home. My guest, my co-host this morning is Kim Mooney with an extensive background in end of life issues. But Kim, your work with hospice over the years, was this ever brought up, what will actually happen to my body after I die?
Yeah, I think it's true with any dying experience. Some families are very curious. Some families want control. Other families want to hand it off to the funeral directors or to hospice. They want kind of hands off. And I think it's important to, of course, respect wherever people are at, because when they get support like that, they're more likely to take that deep breath and open to the next piece of it. And, you know, that's what this whole series is about, is how can we get people to think and talk about it more? It's kind of like we were saying with the Death Cafe. Sometimes when somebody comes to the Death Cafe, it's the first time they ever walked into a funeral parlor, funeral home, and they take that deep breath once and they're willing to go a little farther. Well, the first time I went to Bev's lab and I walked in and saw a cadaver, there was for me a moment where I had to take a deep breath and decide to walk in. And once I did, the room, the energy, everybody was okay with it, so I became okay. But what I realized when we were here talking last time about how people think about bodies as Halloween and they're grotesque and they're coming back to get you, that when you look at a cadaver, it doesn't look like the person. So part of that one moment is actually accepting that that body, as we know in some spiritual traditions, isn't you anymore. And it's a little farther close to Halloween than you would like.
Well, Sue Mackey, in your experience dealing with families, is this a barrier that many families have to get over, that culturally we're not used to being around dead bodies? I mean, you talked about having almost like a wake, I suppose, having a body lie at home. And that's a very strong tradition in many countries. I don't think it's terribly strong here in the US.
No, it's not yet. Not yet, anyway. It's not for everybody.
So is this a barrier that you're finding, that families just don't want to have that because maybe their prior, you know, the preconception about what that is going to be like and just so much of that cultural stuff that maybe gets in the way?
Yeah, as Kim was saying, it's very varied family to family, and a lot of people just have a very strong aversion to being around a dead body. Even going up to see an open casket at a funeral home where it's still pretty removed, a lot of people have an issue with that. So waking a body at home is certainly not for most people yet, but you know, it is something that has to be, that once it's addressed, I think people develop a comfort level. Like Kim was saying, you take a breath and you get through that initial piece of it, that walking into the room where the body might be laying out. And it feels so normal. It feels so right. And it just takes that one time.
Do you stay in touch with families afterwards to see how they're doing and maybe how they were impacted by having the opportunity to have the body at home?
Yes, and generally I have not had an experience yet of a family saying, oh my God, I wish I hadn't done that. It's across the board. They'll oftentimes mention how reticent they were about it, a husband specifically about his wife. I was just going along with this because it was what other people in the family wanted, and then writing in a journal about what a magnificent experience it was and how it helped him really accept his new relationship with his wife who was deceased, as he sat with her body over the few days and seeing that she wasn't her body, and he had a sense of when she really had been released from the body and that it was just simply a chrysalis left, you know, the container that walked her around the planet for however many years. And it helped him really get, you know, he wasn't grasping at, you know, oh, did she really die or could it be different? It really crystallized for him that, yes, she's gone. And now she's in different form, and I have a different relationship with her, and the body's just a container to be discarded.
Is this a movement we're seeing growing more locally? Because I know there are organizations like yourself, Out of the Box Funeral Planning, Natural Transitions, who've been guests mm-hmm. on the show as well to talk about alternatives in death care, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I've heard the term death midwife almost be described because it's helping to transition to that next stage in life. Mm-hmm. Is this something that's gaining in popularity locally?
It is. It's popular in the Boulder area, but not as popular as you would think, being the progressive community that we are. And part of that may be just because our resources are slim as far as providing the service. But it is across the country. There are women in California, Northern California, and in L.A., and on the East Coast and down in Texas who have full-time practices as home funeral guides or midwives.
Well, one of the things that I know is striking when it comes to traditional funeral planning is the cost. Mm-hmm. Because the traditional casket, often lead-lined, very heavy wood, the embalming, I mean, everything that goes along with that can be incredibly expensive. I would imagine that when you kind of regain control of a lot of that, it's going to be a lot more cost-effective. Not that that's a primary issue mm-hmm. for many people, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's out there.
People approach a home funeral from two different directions oftentimes, one being cost, because you can do a home funeral for really just the cost of a direct cremation and the cost of the dry ice. So, and, you know, that can be under $1,000. Traditional, conventional, I prefer to call it, because traditional really is what we used to do 100 years ago. Conventional funerals run $7,000 to $10,000, and that may or may not include the cost of a burial plot, the opening and closing, the headstone, the extras like the flowers, et cetera, et cetera. So it can go up to $20,000. And you're talking about the cost of a car.
Yes, mm-hmm. and you know, for many people, I know that's prohibitive. But
exactly,
maybe people don't realize that there are options. And you don't have to do the full extreme of doing a home funeral. I mean, there are varying degrees of this. Like alternative coffins, I've seen, you know, wicker coffins, mm-hmm. cardboard coffins, eco coffins that will biodegrade, that are opposed to the lead-lined ones that we're, you know,
used
to seeing.
There's a lot of hybridizing that you can do, and you can work with a funeral home and still have an element of maybe keeping a body at home. I like to tell people death is not an emergency. So if you have a need to spend some time with your loved one after they've died, keep them home for up to 24 hours. You don't have to do anything to keep the body preserved. So you can go without dry ice or any kind of embalming process or refrigeration for 24 hours. So a lot of people will elect just to keep the body home for a while and have that time to pray or meditate or speak their peace or whatever. And then they'll call the funeral home and go through the other process. And yes, there's lots of different alternatives for caskets or shrouds or direct into the ground. People can go directly into the ground without anything if that's what they choose.
And I know we're seeing a movement around alternatives to traditional cemeteries where prairie burial areas or in forests, woodland areas. Mm-hmm. I know that's a growing movement as well.
It is. Mm-hmm. And I believe there's a new initiative that Karen Van Vuren at Natural Transitions is part of, trying to get a green burial area here in Boulder County. And again, it's something you'd think we would have, and we don't. We have to go up to Fort Collins. Their public cemetery has a green burial area.
Colorado Springs as well.
Colorado Springs,
too.
Yes. Mm. And Crestone.
That's Sue Mackey, who's with Out of the Box Funeral Planning, one of our guests this morning on KGNU. Our other guest is Bev Boyer, who runs a cadaver lab. And they are talking with us this morning about what happens to the body after we die. My co-host today, Kim Mooney, who joins me for these regular end-of-life shows here at KGNU, Boulder, Denver. Just as we head up to 9 o'clock, we'd like to invite listeners to maybe call in to 303-442-4242. Maybe you have a question, a comment. Maybe you can share your own experience with some of this as well. And we'd love to hear from you. Kim, how much of this do you introduce into the conversation when in your work in hospice care? Do you ask the question, have you made arrangements? Do you know what you might like to happen? Or is this something that really has to come from the person who's dying?
No, I think this is true with the advanced care planning that I do. Any of these pieces are better discussed way upstream when it's still kind of theoretical, and it's fascinating. Trying to deal with any of this in an emergent situation is a lot more complicated because people get blown out, they're overwhelmed. But when we sit and talk about it, and we usually have to suggest it because a lot of times people don't even know it's an alternative, or they haven't thought about it. They've thought about what's in front of them, which is either dealing with illness or the possibility of illness. But you know what I've realized with all of these things is rather than see it as a medical issue, if you can frame it as a life issue, if you can frame it as part of someone's life experience. So when we're talking about all these things, one of the things that strikes me is the thing, the underlying tying theme that makes all of this easier for people is ritual. That as simple as it can be, having people... One old woman told me, very old, she was about 92, and her kids were in their 60s, and they would not come in the bedroom to see their father's body. So she went into the garden, and she picked flowers, and she put a flower between each toe and gave them all one flower, and they walked in the bedroom and put flowers between his toes, and then they started rearranging them. So that one little breath made a difference. That was spontaneously done by the family. But a lot of times when you suggest it to people, they get very excited about what they can do, and that's the way in. So when it's theoretical, when it's something that you can look at and enjoy the concept of, and when families can laugh about it, it makes a lot more difference. We don't want to do anything around dying when it gets very close. It changes the whole complexion of it.
Well, I like what Sue Mackey said. You know, death is, it's not an emergency, or a funeral is not an emergency, because at that point the emergency is past. Mm-hmm. And you do have that breathing space that maybe people don't realize that they have. Well, we have calls coming in right now, people wanting to join the conversation. We'll go first to Chester. Thanks for calling in from Denver. You're on the air. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. Very interesting subject. In 2000, I dealt with the death of my mother. She had lived for 99 and a half years in the Upper Colorado River Valley in and around the town of Granby on ranches and sometimes in town. I knew from family stories and accounts in her life that early in her life, near the start of the last century, why people had to deal with death on their own, and they did. And so I had had quite enough of seeing the mortician's trade in other family funerals, and so I was determined when it was my turn to be in charge after her death that no mortician would be involved. However, I was aware that Colorado had legislation permitting families to take charge, but I needed to be sure, so I contacted state officials and was eventually directed to a woman at the State Department of Health, who in 2000 assured me that that was perfectly true, that a family had a total legal right to take charge of the situation and there was no requirement that morticians be involved. So we did that, but we ran into some interesting experiences in terms the fact was that my mother had taken ill visiting grandchildren here in Denver and as a result of the illness died here in a big hospital in Denver. So the hospital officials were all alarmed when I told them what I intended to do. I was introduced to the head nurse, who gave me a lecture about whether I was violating law and trying to involve the hospital in violation of law. I assured her I was not, and that I had consulted with state officials, and what I was doing was perfectly legal. I also encountered, when I went to get the death certificate from officials in the county in Arapahoe County, south of Denver, where the hospital was located, where she had died, and they, too, had no experience with this and were all fuss-budgety alarmed. So I tried to educate both the hospital and the county officials in Arapahoe County about the perfect legality of taking charge in this way. Mm-hmm. And as some of your comments of your guests and you, Maeve, have made clear, this is a healthy thing for a family to do, and it was certainly true in our experience.
But Chester, thank you very much for sharing your story, and I think Chester's story really highlights the fact that there are so many people, including professionals in the medical industry, who just don't actually understand what we can do. So if somebody, Sue, maybe has a loved one who passes in hospital but wants to take them home, I mean, can you just show up with your pickup truck? I mean, what are some of the legalities around this? Chester obviously did a lot of research, but a lot of people don't have the wherewithal to maybe do that, and it is often a time of crisis.
It's as simple as picking up the phone and calling.
Yeah, and good for you, Chester, for being proactive like that. And most people just don't know how to argue the point. It's a matter of education, as you found out. You had to educate the people at the hospital and at the when you took the death certificate in, that yes, you had the legal right to do that. There's an organization called the Funeral Consumers Alliance, FCA.org, and on that website you can pull up your state's legal rights and you can print them out and keep them with you, and you can take that piece of paper with you to the hospital or whatever and gently educate them. You know, we always want to be not the adversary, but an educator, and because we do have the right to transport, we have the right to act as a funeral director in Colorado.
There was an interesting turn of events then when we went after a grandson built a coffin because we intended to, of course, to bury her in the Granby Cemetery. She'd lived there all her life, and so we went to collect the body from the hospital morgue. We were, to our surprise, greeted by the head nurse of the hospital who had lectured me so sternly about involving the hospital potentially in illegal activities, and she was tearful, and she said, "It is so wonderful what you are doing as a family. I have never seen this before."
Nice. That's beautiful. Nice. And that does happen. You know, once the hospital or the nursing home is educated, a lot of times a family then will get that kind of support, and they'll have help with the gurney and getting the body into the vehicle so that you can do what you want to do for your loved one.
Once you move it back
into
the human.
Thanks for all the work the two of you are doing.
Thank you very much, Chester. And just before we let you go and go on to our next callers, had you discussed this with your mother in advance? Was this something that was kind of out there in the open amongst the family?
Oh, yes, certainly with her. And you know, I told my sole sister that I was very clear in my mind that that we had to be in agreement about how to do this, but I was not going to be, on my volition, involved with any morticians in any way whatsoever. And so she said, well, ball's in your court, take it. So I did. Mm-hmm. With my mother, I actually lived with her in her home in Granby in the last 6 months of her life, as it turned out. She was in good health, and for somebody 99 and a half, but we did talk about death, and she went over some of the stories from her own life experience about dealing with it directly, because that's what you did. I mean, in Granby, at that time, winters were extremely severe. 40 below, 50 below occurred many winters. If people died in the winter, they did the thing about the similar to the famous man at Nederland. They put the body in the barn and let it freeze because they had no equipment to dig through 4 feet of frozen earth, you know, et cetera, at the turn of the century. So in any case, she was fearful. She didn't like the idea of cremation because I think of associations with hell and such. She was not a denominationally religious woman, but there was this stuff in the culture about fire and et cetera. So she didn't like that idea, and I didn't either. And I had stumbled on, as a college student, actually, in a used bookstore, a manual for morticians, which vividly described the process of embalming, a very grotesque process. And so we talked about that, and she was clear in her mind, no, thank you. Mm-hmm. So that was the journey.
Well, Chester, thank you again for calling in. We appreciate your call. We have lots of calls coming in to 303-442-4242. We'll go next to Lynn calling in from Boulder. Thanks for waiting. What's your question or comment?
One, I think this is kind of a reflection, the way that we face death in this country. It's a reflection, possibly, of our exceptionalism and our imperial attitudes to not face death, because we haven't really discovered empathy. And another thing I wanted to bring up is when someone could die, your parent, your loved one could die, you know, crossing the street today. I'm very aware of this because I was a non-custodial parent against my will, and so I'm very sensitized to my kids of not being able to see them as they were growing up. So maybe I just have that, or maybe it's just naturally in me. I always feel like that I'm ready for my kids to die before me, if that happens. I'm ready for my brother to die. I'm ready for good friends to die, because I hug them when I see them, and I live as if any day is my own last, you know. And it seems practical to feel that way. And as far as educating people, or as far as talking about it just to people, I think that it comes up more that people feel that way if you really talk about it.
Well, Lynn, thanks very much for your call and your input.
The other thing is composting. I prefer to be composted.
I'm going to talk actually with Sue Mackey about that and what can and can't happen around that. But Lynn, thank you very much for calling in. We have a lot of calls weighing in on this conversation. Kim, did you want to say something?
Well, we had talked a lot about, the different ways to handle this. I think that really briefly what Lynn said is the most important piece, is if you really recognize that this could happen at any point, then all of this becomes current information. It becomes current fodder, so to speak. Mm-hmm. No. One of the things we'll talk about a little bit later is culturally, what she was addressing, because there are a lot of other cultures where this is not only common, it's expected. And the rituals there are so built into the culture that this becomes fun.
Well, and I'm going to ask Bev Boyer about that in just a moment, in terms of, do people have a traditional funeral maybe before they might end up in a cadaver lab, because that ritual is often so important to many people.
Yes, that does happen.
Because I've heard that people would like to donate their body to science or do organ donation, but they think that would bypass a funeral, and that's very important, not just for them, but for their family.
Right. No, but that can be a part of the planning, and the family can and have the person as long as they would like. As far as if it takes a week for all the family members to come in, then the funeral service, they will make sure that the body is prepared and restored to wait for the family to come in. So yes, that's very possible.
That's Bev Boyer. She runs a cadaver lab, and she actually creates relationships with donors before they die. And it's one of the few ones in Colorado. She's based in Longmont
and Colorado Springs
as well. My other guest this morning is Sue Mackey with Out of the Box Funeral Planning. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. Kim Mooney joining us now. We'll go to our next caller, Jean, calling in from Denver. Welcome to the show. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. The comment is actually, I'm offering an answer to your first question at the beginning of the show, why we are in this situation, how we strayed away from tradition into this industry. You never got an answer to that question, but the answer is suggested exactly by the word industry. Because it became an industry. People don't give birth at home, don't die at home anymore, because the so-called industries and institutions have taken over. And it's very convenient for them, and you have to educate the institutions that you still have authority and rights over loved one that has died in the family. Excuse me.
Well, thanks for your comment, Jean. What's your question?
The question is, I have a little red heart on my driver's license, and if I fail to make specific arrangements before I die, what happens to me when I do die? And my wife, my kids have to make decisions what to do with me afterwards.
So the little red heart denoting the organ donation. Bev, is this something that you can maybe answer?
If you are an organ donor, that your family can make those arrangements when you die. So go ahead.
After I die.
Correct.
It's up to them. And if they fail to do so, that amounts to nothing, that little heart.
No, you're... Go ahead, Kim, if you...
Well, if you've put the heart on your driver's license, my understanding is that you have officially said you want to be a donor. The donor registers. The registry knows that. If you're in hospice, they will be helping Donor Alliance try to find you. If you die in the hospital, they actually come to the hospital and do education again with your family. But also, they're there. I mean, the systems are in place because these are such precious gifts. The systems are in place to help you. So you're not on your own completely.
So once that red heart is on your driver's license, you're actually in a registry. So you will be found, essentially.
Right. And, you know, it's like everything else that we're dealing with now. There's what's on the books and there's what happens in real life. And there are huge gaps between what's legal and what is humane. Sometimes the industries, as we're talking about, we gave those authorities over to them 120 years ago when medicine started extending our lives, when it was safer to move into, you know, an environment outside your home. So we've created what these industries are now, and so taking it back is a nice balance because there are some things that the medical profession and the funeral industry do that are really good and really helpful to us.
Well, Jean, thanks very much. Hopefully that answered your question. We have a lot of calls, people really wanting to weigh in on this. And I do want to just put a shout out there for the more conventional funeral industry as well, because that's very comforting for many people who don't necessarily want to take ownership. Not everybody wants to do this. And particularly if you haven't been in a family where this has been something that's been discussed. And so I've had very positive experience with the more conventional funeral industry as well. So we don't want to kind of make this an adversarial conversation.
But we do need to talk about wakes. Irish wakes.
We'll talk
Irish
about that in just a sec. But I would like to invite Carla from Denver, who is our next caller. Welcome to the show, Carla. What's your question or comment?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on the show. So I have two comments and then a question. My first comment is my father-in-law committed suicide about 2 years ago, and it became an emergency, and it was really hard. We didn't see it coming. And the only way that I was able to have peace was right before he was cremated, because we couldn't afford an elaborate funeral and it was such an emergency situation, was right before he went into the cremation oven thing, I was able to hug him and kiss him and see his body. And that was like so important to me. I know most of my family is from the South, and in the South there's a lot of tradition around having the body in the home and the wake and having everybody bring food and celebrate the death. And I kind of had wished that we could have done something like that, but I didn't know what our rights were and it was such an emergency. So I really respect the work that you guys are doing. My question is, I'm curious, how do people get involved with this, or are there careers in this field of this sort of alternative way of dealing with death instead of the traditional funeral home?
But Carla, great question, and thank you for sharing your story. We're so sorry. What a terrible experience for you. Bev and Sue, how do you get involved in this, and how can you maybe have this as a career?
Good question. So for me, it was something that was important to further my own education to be a better practitioner, because I still am a practitioner. So it's really following your heart and looking at how you want to help people. So for me, I want to help other therapists like myself, and how we can do that is studying human anatomy. And what a wonderful gift when somebody consciously makes that decision and helps us before they pass. And Sue might be better, depending on what area you want to get into, with helping people and creating differences. But, you know, follow your passion, create what a difference you can make in the industry, and people will follow you.
Sue, how might you get involved in your type of line of work?
You can check the National Home Funeral Alliance website. Just Google that. And through that website, you can find education around how to help people go do the home funeral process. I also do a workshop in Boulder a couple times a year through Natural Transitions, training people on home funeral legalities and practicalities, etc.
As far as making it a career, it's a tough one. There's a lot of people who have a real passion for this, and making a career out of it is very, on a practical level, is very challenging. Mm-hmm. But the funeral industry is changing, and I believe that as far as the students in the mortuary schools, it used to be a very male-dominated industry, and I believe it's about 60% women now.
And I wonder, has that changed?
It's bringing more heart, and we've had funeral directors attend our workshops. Local funeral directors attend our home funeral workshops to see what it is that we offer. You know, with the perspective that we're coming from, and what people might be looking for. And I found some really fine funeral directors in the area who are willing to do this hybridization of, you know, and support a family if they want to keep the body at home and such.
Well, Carla, thank you very much for calling in and sharing your story. We have about 13 minutes left. These shows always go fast. We could probably squeeze in one or two more calls to 303-442-4242. Carla brought up a great point about that she was coming from the South, and wakes are a huge part of that. I mean, it's very culturally connected what we do with the dead body. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kim, you asked me about being in Ireland. I've been to many a wake, because that was not so much in Dublin, but certainly in rural areas, that's what you do. The person is laid out in the parlour or mm-hmm. the kitchen. And so I had seen, you know, many dead bodies. And even if you don't have the wake at home, you can have a wake at the church, because you have a removal mm-hmm. where the body is brought from either the mortuary or wherever in to the church, and you can sit there with the body as well. And I've met many people who've never been around a dead body, and you talked a little bit about that so many people just don't even want to see even, you know, the viewing. And yet, like we're hearing from Carla and so many other people, it can be very, very healing mm-hmm. in the grieving process.
And one thing about the Irish wakes is that they were, I don't want to say the forerunner, but they're celebrations.
Oh, and absolutely. It's a party.
Yeah, yeah. And we're moving toward that more and more. It's more common. But you know, my family was Irish in Chicago in the 40s when there was very little regulation. And at one of my grandfather's best friend's wakes, as they promised him, they picked him up and put him in the car and took him to the bar and bought him a drink. Now, we wouldn't get away with that today. But that's how that blend of life and death was it was fun.
Well, we have a couple of calls coming in. We'll try and squeeze them in the last few minutes of the show. But Sue and Bev, you know, the legalities around this seems to be a question that's emerging. And it seems to vary state by state. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that, Bev? I mean, are the cadavers that come to your laboratory, are they people in Colorado?
Yes.
Can they cross state lines?
They are in Colorado, and we have not worked with anyone that has crossed state lines. However, I do know ScienceCare, they will accept people from different states other than Arizona and Colorado. So I know that it's possible. Yeah.
And Sue, it does seem to be something state specific. Colorado has its own set of regulations over what you can do compared to other states.
You are legally able to do a home funeral, all aspects of a home funeral in every state but 8. And there's a wonderful book called Final Rites by Josh Slocum and Lisa Carlson that lays out state by state what your rights are, and that's all the same information that's on the FCA.org website if you're curious about a state that where your family might be.
And in terms of just some of the other legalities, specifically here in Colorado, Carlton, who called earlier, talked about, you know, bringing the body back to bury in the Granby Cemetery, his mother. Mm-hmm. I have heard people who would like to bury their body on their own land.
Yes.
If they do have that kind of land. I mean, what are some of the regulations around that? And another woman I had heard wanted to have like a funeral pyre on land mm-hmm. as well. And I know there are restrictions mm-hmm. and some regulations around that as well.
I couldn't give you actual code or anything, but in Boulder County, it is legal to bury on your own land if you have a certain amount of land and you're not, right in Boulder proper. So Boulder County area, it's totally legal. You do have to register with the county, so that, and it has to be indicated on your property deed, which there's pluses and minuses to that, but that I know you have to do. So there's an issue of, you know, selling the land, whether or not a potential buyer might want a cemetery on the property. That's definitely an option. And as far as a funeral pyre goes, there you can do an open air cremation. There are open air pyres in Crestone and up at Shambhala Center. They are limited to people who are part of their practice and also to, I think, 10 or 12 a year because of the emissions issues. You have to arrange to have a fire truck sitting there the entire time. Mm-hmm. I do know of cremations that have happened on private land, kind of under the radar in Boulder County, where they've pulled a burn permit and not indicated what exactly it was that they were burning.
I see. Well, we won't get into that too much. But Lynn, one of our earlier callers, said, I want to be composted. That seems a fairly valid attitude. I think that sounds great. But, I mean, realistically speaking, you can't put somebody in a compost pile. I mean, you have to have some kind of, well, you know, there are restrictions.
I don't know. Really, I think in Japan, because of their space limitations, they are talking about vertical composting things, you know, where that's exactly what happens. Maybe she's referring also to just being dust to dust, you know, going directly into the ground, which is a possibility.
There is another aspect to this, though, that people are learning about cremation is they assume that if they're cremated and they scatter their ashes, it's actually nourishing. And there is a process that is not yet in this country, but it's coming, I think, from Europe, where bodies are frozen, flash frozen, and then they use something like ultrasound to reduce them to particles, and this actually is nutritious. So they are planted with trees ritually, and they actually give something back, which is what I think a lot of people mm-hmm. are looking for.
Well, we have a couple of callers. I'll try and squeeze them in at the last minute here. Todd in Boulder, thanks for waiting. Do you have a brief question or comment this morning?
Yeah, and you kind of just got there. I was wondering about burying on your own land, but I was also wondering about, I sort of like the idea of getting kind of buried in a shallow grave so that the body does kind of go back into the natural system. So do you have to get put in a box? Can you just get wrapped in a sheet and kind of put on land, you know, contingent upon it there being acreage and, you know, it's not within the city of Boulder?
Yes, I think it's just you only need to be buried 2 feet deep, which is what you're referring to, so that way your body will naturally decompose aerobically as opposed to anaerobically. And you do not need a container for a green burial. You can be wrapped in a shroud, a sheet. I've even heard of people who just want to be naked.
And we've heard earlier, Todd, Sue mentioned that our local organization, Natural Transitions, that Karen Van Vuren, a frequent guest here as well, she's working to get a green burial plot mm-hmm. in Boulder as well. So we'll continue to follow that. Well, thanks very much for calling in. We'll try to squeeze George in Denver. Thanks for calling in. What's your question or comment?
Thanks for a really important discussion. Quick question. For the agencies, the organizations who receive the corpse to use for training for massage therapists and a list of several other people, who does the teaching and what's the authority and what kind of licensure would use that teaching of whoever the teacher is on biomechanics or muscles or anatomy? How does that work, please?
Sure. So we have several people involved that do the teaching. I myself am one of the instructors. My co-founder, Bonnie Thompson, is also a massage therapist background, but we bring in several specialties. We bring in chiropractors. We actually have Dr. Peter Schmidt as our medical director, and he is a plastic surgeon. And so he does national teaching and reaching out. And so we have several authorities that do teach the classes. So it's kind of what you're interested in. It is a community lab. It is for the public.
And so who can come in and interact with the cadavers?
Yeah, so actually anyone can come in. We just had a group from Estes Park High School, a sports medicine academy class. They have an evening school class. There were 11 students, anywhere from sophomores, juniors, and seniors, and they were brought with their teacher, and they all had authority they signed off, their parents signed off for them to be there. And it was a wonderful experience for them to come in and kind of tie in the end of their education. So they had nurses that came to the classroom, they had orthopedic doctors that came and spoke to them. But at the lab, the cadaver is the teacher. Mm-hmm. You know, the cadaver teaches us what we need to learn.
So it's very much hands-on.
It's very much hands-on, yes.
But George, I hope that answered your question.
Thank you very much.
Thanks
for all
much.
The good you do.
Thank you. And then, Bev, I'd imagine there's a licensing process for this. I couldn't just go home and set one up in my garage.
No, we actually went through a lot of legalities to be approved for a lab to receive cadavers. And through Science Care, they were our first avenue of receiving until we established our own donor program. In Longmont, we work out of a laboratory downstairs at Carolyn Llewellyn Funeral Services. So we work directly with the funeral services. When we had one of our donors pass in Longmont, the hospital contacted me. We contacted the funeral service. They picked up the body. They held the body until the family came in. They were able to do a service there, and then we received the body afterwards. And it was a wonderful thing. I was able to attend the service. I had already met one of the daughters, but I got to meet the other daughter and really share just an equal admiration for each other. And their mom was very much into alternative medicine, and she wanted people to learn from her. And so it was really a beautiful thing. But talking about the vessel, she was not who she was in the real world. Her body was a vessel at that point, and her family could see it, and we can see it.
Have there been a situation where there's been conflict where the family didn't want this? Because we've heard that in end-of-life issues before.
Not in any situation we have dealt with. Yeah.
But this sounds like something you would avoid because you have that prior relationship in many ways before death.
Correct. And we usually meet with the family along with the donor so that everyone is clear in the whole process.
Well, we did have a listener who didn't want to go on air but had a question. If somebody is single without family, how can that person have an advocate for them to have these funeral and burial alternatives? Sue, is that something, or Kim?
Yeah, I'm going to pass that to Kim.
Well, I would say fill out your documentation, not only in advanced care planning, the documents we do with that, but there is one piece that designates who can dispose of your remains. So in any kind of advanced care planning, a lot of times it isn't the family that people choose as representatives. They choose their family of intention. They choose their friends. And when you designate someone to dispose of your remains, they are the ones who will be in charge of that and legally have responsibility. So
these are the documents that we've talked about before. You can get these online. What's the term for them again?
Advanced care planning. It's advanced directives. Advanced directives are usually two, but all of this is about advanced care planning.
And you can. And I have heard people planning a funeral prior to them passing as well. I mean, that seems to be pretty common. They pick the music, and there seems to be more acceptance nearly of that than maybe some of the other end of life things.
Well, there's the celebration. Wouldn't you like to hear what people have to say about you after you're dead?
Well, I have a wonderful story. I was at a cremation, a good friend of mine, when his dad passed. He was a big fan of the Bay City Rollers, which was a very cheesy pop band from Scotland in the 70s. And so we blared out Bay City Rollers' greatest hits as the coffin went in, and everyone had a great laugh, and it was what he had wanted. And I think he chose that because he knew that that would lighten things for his family and would kind of create that. So many different options, and it's been a wonderful morning of information. We're going to put all of this information at news.kgnu.org. We'll put information about Bev Boyer and her cadaver lab and how people can get in touch. And so if people aren't in any way, they may feel that they're not in any way close to an end of life process now, but they do want to get all of these plans in place, as myself and Kim are always saying, do it before you're sick, do it before you're actually dying. How might they have their intention expressed to you and kind of get on your register, as it were?
Sure. So through our website is probably the best way, and it's peakresearchinstitute.org. Everything is by appointment only. So we meet with people directly. We don't just let people get paperwork off the internet and fill it out and think that they're a part of us, because that's not the way we do it. So we really like to meet with them one-on-one to find out and try to meet their needs.
PeakResearchInstitute.org. That's Bev Boyer. We'll put that information at our website. Sue Mackey with Out of the Box, excuse me, funeral planning. How can people find out more about your work and maybe get in contact?
Also, my website, outoftheboxfuneralplanning.com. And I work with people one-on-one to go through all of their different options, to present to them alternatives maybe to what a traditional or conventional mortuary might present. And then help people with the selection process, even down to choosing an appropriate mortuary if that's the route that they want to go. And I help with all the other paperwork around just having all the pieces pulled together, your advanced care planning and your contact list and all the different elements, your passwords, getting all these pieces pulled together in what I call your final exit box.
And Kim Mooney, your website is
practically-dying.com,
and there's lots of information there on all kinds of end-of-life issues.
And I'm going to echo one thing. Getting documents off of the internet may cover a basic legality, but it's not going to help with the humanity and the need and the personalization of your own dying. Mm. So it's really important to talk.
Well, Kim Mooney, Sue Mackey, and Bev Boyer, thank you all very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks to all our
great callers. We had a wonderful selection today. Yeah. We'll be posting all of this information and the archive of the show at news.kgnu.org. It's 9:30. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks so much for tuning in to A Public Affair. Stay tuned for the Morning Sound Alternative with Uncle Jeff.